Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we're also making sure to provide you, the listening audience, with a platform to send us guests. So if you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and click on the contact page there, you can send us their name, email address, Skype, phone number, whatever you can of your favourite guest, and we will attempt to get them on, unless they're a douchebag and say, no, you're too small, I'm not going to come on that little show. Yeah, like, I'm serious about this, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. I don't even check up on who my guests that are coming on are, so as to ensure that it's fresh. That's why we pretty much begin every show with, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, because I honestly don't know. And more to the point, who would be able to give a more accurate answer than the person themselves? All right, and that's why we have such genuine and such fun, good times here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Particularly, and this is another thing, I tend to cheer people up. So if you've got a favourite activist or something like that who's real down in the dumps, you know, got black SUVs camped outside their home with sniper rifles trained at their skull and stuff like that, you know, send them on to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Before you know it, I'll have them laughing and just going, hey, you know what, being exterminated ain't that bad after all, because I get to have a few laughs about it. Okay, anyway, Bradley Keith, Dr. John Searle, and Emma Verkill, my very special guest. Now, you were explaining a little bit of something before we went off to break there, Bradley.
Yeah, the 4x4 square, you know, it's really a little bit different here because we're doing it on the radio. I have watched Searle take the 4x4 square, and of course we're talking about four squares in a column and four squares across in rows. 4x4 makes up 16 squares. You can put numbers in them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and that's in perfect order. Now, he will rearrange these numbers so that the output, when you add the columns and you add the rows and you add the diagonals, you add the center four, the four corners, that will all come up to a specific number. In the simplest case, the number's 34. That's a balanced square. But you notice all those numbers are in a completely different order. And the order that John was talking about, from the lower left corner to the upper right corner, has to step in threes. 4, 7, 10, 13. That's a step by three. Now, that gives you the quantities, and it doesn't matter if it's ounces or pounds whatever the size, whatever the measurement is, but though that number of that measurement gives you the materials that you're going to use in the SEG. Now, Searle's taken this law of the squares so much further because he can demonstrate. He'll take a 4x4 square and ask you to put in a two-digit numeral that's above 16 and below 100, of course, and within 21 seconds will fill out the entire square mathematically. Now, that's amazing in its own right, but what's happening here is we have a man that understands this law of the squares to the extent that the values within that face of the square are expressing to us a switching and a rotation of energy within a three-dimensional space. John, is that about right?
That is correct, yes.
And when you do that and demonstrate, you get from the lower left to the upper right. John, where did the squares come from in your life?
It's from a game called Hopscotch, which I think most young ones have played. But there are different types available people play. This one is eight squares. 1, 2, 3, then 4 and 5 horizontal, then you go six, then you go back to the horizontal, seven and eight. One is never used, but there's a good reason for that. You see, when the atom lays up its electrons, when it gets to seven, before it can load any more, it starts another layer. Then it loads that layer up. And all through that, all the way through. So what this Hopscotch is saying is that we are talking about the atom. Now, it also is telling me you use three elements and one non-element, because in order conversion of what it's saying, one is not an element, therefore it has to be a compound, a molecule. So it told me that what I got to do, take three elements and then take one insulated material. Any insulated material, plastic, anything. In my day, we only had the Bakelite to use. But today, you have nylon and all types of plastics. But what you got to think of, that every type of material has a different density. The greater that density is, the smaller that unit can be. So the first thing I have to do is to look at how small I want the unit, then find the ingredients, the chemicals I need that will fit in that size. So if you put, say, copper on the outside layer, that would be 1/8 as thick as if you use an aluminium. So you can see, using aluminium makes the HG much larger. And the greater the rare earth value is, the smaller the unit can be.
And John, now this comes from the series of dreams you had as a child.
Yes. But let me put it this way. My dreams were better teachers than you find at the kiddie schools or the primary schools.
And I remember you mentioned they were a work dream.
Yes. Because if they dreams, if you follow them, you create something. So therefore, it's a work dream.
And so as a child, you're dreaming of yourself playing this hopscotch game, but it has very significant elements within the dream. Describe those.
Yes. Well, first of all, I've always started off in square two. That is a critical thing. Two is vital in every step of the HG design. In other words, there are always two primary states in everything in this universe, and they are opposites. So that's the first thing one has to remember. Then, when you do a energy device, you've got a negative and a positive root. So we have the two again. But here, my pebble is in three. What I discovered when I was experimenting with the mathematics, three starts the matrices. But it tells me, do not use three, go to four. And on working out four, I eventually found one face that fits. Now, that was one of six faces. So it was a cube. I had the dreams for 6 years. It's telling me it's a cube. Don't forget, there's only one face worth looking at for what I need to do. And it had to be from the left bottom diagonal to the top right. And when
so
you look at this, the match, right, what the value is, it steps in three. But it also suggests there's two ways of doing the cube, and there is. I found it. And strange enough, that line will always be split into three. In other words, 6, 9, 12, 15 between the values. They divide by 3. If it divides by some other value, then it will not work.
And
so it all works out as an elementary project.
And this information was literally encoded into both the hopscotch game and the law of the squares regarding a 4x4 square, which is a single face of a six-face cube.
That's correct. It's a code. So it's information. Matrix are information devices.
And when you followed this code, the result was the SEG.
Yep, yes. And it goes into a circle. And you know, even if you work out a building or even a flying machine, it's a circle.
Circles and squares, squares and circles, Vinny.
See, I'm kind of a little bit lost here. I'm a little bit confused.
Yeah, well, it's a little difficult to describe on the radio. The point being that John's having a pair of dreams for 6 years, and the dreams are enacted in the 1940s when he begins to work with magnetics and electrics. And the significance is, John, when the man gave you the docket in 1946 and said 2 with a small 2 in the superscript, what happened there?
I asked him what the values were, and he said, there's no values. It's just a formula. And I said, it's a structure. It's got function. So what are these values? He said, nothing, just a formula. So when I got back to my dig, I started working on the numbers. And in the end, I discovered 1 and 2 are not real format. They are DNA. 1 relates to trees, plants, planets, and only one creature that I know of is the virus. It's the only one that fits the 1 square system. All things that move have to use the 4 square or 2 square system. Everything, because it needs to produce energy to move.
And so, Vinny, to help you, because I realize the difficulty after the near 20 years I've been around John, we have in our world of physics, and Amar can speak to this, we have in our world of physics the capability of those brilliant minds to have both linear ideas and have algebraic equations to express the linear ideas, and it gets way off into a level of understanding that a very, very few people are able to cope with, let alone complete. Understand, and it gets more and more and more exotic. And here we have in front of us a system that is 5,000 years old, that comes from Lo Shu in China. And he basically, Lo Shu looked at the back of a turtle, and the back of the turtle had boxes, little tiny boxes, and he put values in the box, and it was basically a 3x3 matrix, the same that Searle talks about. Now, can it be, would it be, could it be that the simplicity of our dimensions within which we live are better expressed not by these algebraic equations and linear string theories, et cetera, et cetera? Maybe. Is it possible that it's much simpler, that the rotation of mathematical values within squares, and the reason being squares is that squares are not just squares, they're three-dimensional cubes, and the cubes have a value, and the value has a mathematical rotation about it. And let's throw it to Amar. You're trying to connect this, Amar, to quaternions and the Lorentz equations and Maxwell out of the 1800s, correct?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty interesting project, and it's not just me. We got my associates and myself. I can't, you know, get into too much specifics due to the nature of the topic, but I will say that we have some very serious-minded investigators looking at these squares. And one of the interesting conclusions, quick conclusion, one of my associates came up with. He's an emeritus professor for electrical engineering, one of the major universities here in California. And he said that this whole thing looks like a slide rule of quaternions. Now, the next question somebody's going to ask me is, what on earth is a quaternion? And I'll get to that. But I think we're all, to some degree, familiar with how slide rules work before the advent of calculators. At least the idea is that John has some kind of a metrical system so that it allows him to better handle space-time, but also in how energy dynamics unfold in it. So what my associate said. He said this looks like a slide rule of a system of energetics. Okay.
Well, the question then, Amar, is again, back to what I was saying, that there's a very exotic field that you're in and that your peers are in. Now, could it be possible that it is a much simpler situation, something like this 3D geometric square situation, for a better handle on what we're living in?
I think so, there's been some recent progress in that seems to come back to the fundamental our fundamental understanding of physics, which is to do with how these forces that we are investigating in nature, we call them fundamental forces, and then beginning to realize that perhaps there are other forces that are not so fundamental after all. They are.
I'm sorry, we're coming to break because fundamentally we have to pay the bills. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Sorry about that.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels
Welcome
so good
back.
To be alive and on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Fine.
And yeah.
This job is
G'day.
More important than me.
I know.
If we don't get this.
Hey, John,
done,
John, we can hear you in the background here, mate. Hey, see, and this is another point that I want to raise with people. Anybody who's listening to people like us on the radio, understand that we're just normal people like you. You know, we've got our missus cutting in every now and again. My missus occasionally passes me notes telling me to shut up and let the guests talk more, which I found pretty interesting. During a live broadcast, you know, just comes in with a little note. I think I showed it on the webcam when it happened. It was hilarious. But, yeah, we're generally just ordinary people. We don't have copious quantities of funding behind us from a gargantuan, evil, monopolistic energy cartels and things of that nature to support us. And what I've found is that happens in this particular industry, whatever truth you're talking about, it's about trust. Okay, and what happens is because you get your trust violated so many times by bad people, you start to think that there's no point trusting anybody, even the good people, and that destroys your ability to even make any decent friendships and survive. And it's very good that John's managed to have this wonderful person, Bradley, to come on and give him the support that he needs in order to just continue to tell his story. And Bradley, you know, salutes and hats off to you, mate.
Thank you, Vinny. Thank you. It's very kind words, and I appreciate that. He's a fascinating man. And like I said in our intro, when I met him, he told me a story that absolutely knocked my socks off. And I know sometimes when we do these, it kind of gets into an arena where it's so difficult to describe. But the bottom line for me is something extraordinary happened in this man's life. Now, I remember doing an interview here and there with some folks, and they say to me, okay, Brad, why? You know, what are you talking about here? What I'm talking about is looking at it empirically, Vinny. You look at that period we were talking about when John was just a few minutes ago saying in the 1950s he's challenged to build this unit and he builds the unit. Okay, fine. It gets shoved off into the corner, but something unique happens here. After he leaves Midlands Electricity, 13 old age pensioners with money come along and decide to fund him, Vinny. Now, the question is why? Okay, they're funding a novelty, and they see the novelty, but they want to see it happen. Here's the thing that is unique. These gentlemen would fund him for a month or 2 months or 3 months, see a result, and then say, okay, this isn't worth it anymore. But what happens is they fund him for years. Why? Why? Why would they give this man money for years? Something unique is happening back in the early 60s, the late 50s, early 60s. Their money is doing something extraordinary. And even if it is this man building what are essentially flying discs and shooting them around, the simple fact that they fund him for a certain length of time tells us that an extraordinary thing was happening. You can have a plus side, or you can have a negative side. You can have people tear him down, kick him to the curb. But the fact of the matter is, these guys fund him, and they fund him up until the mid-70s. In one way, in one shape, in one form or another, John Searle is funded. And this has to be thousands and thousands of pounds. The equipment, the materials, the ability to use the tooling and the presses. Midland's never shut down their tooling and presses to him. They allowed him to go forward. Now, this is enough evidence to say to us today, when we structured, when Searle Magnetics was set up, and then when Searle Technology was set up, it was designed to give an infrastructure within a legal system that was compliant with all SEC and IRS compliance over here in the States, so that we could do what? Let's explore this unit. Now, Searle contends there's a magnetic waveform that can be printed and repeated. Well, guess what? We did it. We printed it. We repeated it. Searle contends that there is energy within a specific set of layered materials. We have done that. We have measured that. There is energy present. Now, if there is energy present in a static piece of material, like this one I'm going to show you, this is one of Searle's component parts. Now, if you touch an oscilloscope to the center and touch the other probe of the oscilloscope to the rim, the oscilloscope will spike 3, 5, 7 volts. Now, that means that in here, our voltage, it volts energy. Now, according to Maxwell, all you need to do with this, if the energy's in it, is move it. And if you move it, those electrons will come out. If they come out, we've got current. Now, that was something that was very unique. The third thing was the round magnets spinning around other round magnets without stopping or flying off. The Searle effect generator mock-up, which was never meant to be an SEG. It is not an SEG. It is merely a demonstration unit to show that round magnets will indeed continuously spin around other round magnets. Another piece of proof was this eddy current thing he talks about. On the surface of this roller and on the surface of that plate are supposed to be eddy currents. We have a demonstration down there that is merely a ring of copper. And that copper...
Well, can I ask... Why do they call them eddy currents? Is it because they're steady, like steady eddy?
Yeah, no, they're simply called eddy currents in the world of electric engineering. And what it is as my understanding anyway, is a surplus of electrons. In standard electrical engineering, you don't want eddy currents because it's essentially a waste of energy. You know, it's bleeding off. When you plug something in, energy is bleeding off. You're getting the power you need, but some energy is bleeding off. Those are eddy currents. What Searle wants is abundant eddy currents. Now, we demonstrate that with a drum of copper and a magnetized piece of material per Searle's design, and you put that in proximity to a spinning non-magnetic material, and what do you feel? You feel suddenly a repulsive magnetic field from a non-magnetic material.
Why? I also feel a repulsive magnetic field when I approach politicians.
I know the same politicians, and I get that same feel. But the important thing here is there are five pieces of demonstrative hardware that we've examined. We took pieces of Searle's claim and said, okay, is this certain? Does this work? Does it? Five times in a row we vindicate the man. And so the compelling question now is, if all five work, we must take step number six. Why? Just look at the world. Look at the geopolitical situation in the world. Look at the energy situation in the world. At the bottom line is always energy. We live in a world of fear. We live in a world where people are worried about the tomorrow and the tomorrows after that. They're worried about their kids. And this thing about fear rising as everything else is dropping, we need to have hope rise and fear drop. Now, how are we going to get to that? I think, one man's opinion, I think that we get to that by giving these emergent technologies a chance. The amount of money in America that they waste on this thing, that thing, or another thing that is just flushed down the black hole, let's have a small percentage of that backing some of these emergent technologies to say, okay, look, the paradigm has to shift. We have to get away from burning fossil fuels. We have to get away from destroying the environment within which we live. And to do that, we have to explore these emergent technologies. Let's take advantage of the motion of that electron. In the case of Searle, we vindicated him five times, and we're saying to people, we must take step six. Let's build this device while this inventor is still with us. John Roy, are you there?
Well, I watched 2 minutes ago, and I'm still sitting on there now.
And what do you think? Are we going to get this thing built?
Well, it's up to the people.
And what would you say to the people?
Come and join us. Let's make it happen. It's your future and your grandchildren's future we have to think of. So let's get down. Let's do it and show the world that we can make this planet a much better place. Cleaner air, cleaner food, a much healthier condition, less stress. Let's stop worrying about what we're going to eat tomorrow. Is it good or bad? Let's make it good. That's what I'm here for, to try to find the solutions, how to do it.
And if I may, Vinny, I want to just ask Searle one or two questions that for us are frequently asked questions. John Roy, how come you could do it back then and you don't seem to be able to do it now?
Well, I think we've traveled from 1946 through time to a different world. Can you go to the shop and buy me a nice fresh baked big loaf of bread for 4 pence. Can you go to the pub and get me a nice beer, a good pint beer for tuppence? Can you send an email letter from the UK to Australia for threepence? Or can you buy a kilo of rare earth for 32 cents? If you can, I will pay you double for it.
And how about those people that come on to you and say, oh, John, I've got neodymium magnets. Can I build this in my garage? What do you say?
I hope the garage is a big garage, because that's not only getting the rare earth. Those magnets, I think you could get them to get to motion, but you want power. And to get power, you've got to change your thinking. You've got to have a completely different type of magnetizing system, where the law of the square says you've got to have two different functions working. And the way they do magnetizing, you only got one. So that's useless.
And so it's not about spinning neodymium magnets, is it?
No.
Never was it?
Never was. It's all about organizing materials so it acts like a diode from the electrical point of view, so the power always goes outwards. Secondly, it's adjusting the material so that as the energy passes through, you do not keep losing energy passing through the next layer and then the next layer, ending up with no spare power to push those rollers. you must end up at the end of that design with energy to spare. And it only takes 5 volts to make a lumber metal spin around another lumber metal.
And, John, I know that we're going to put some of these questions to rest, at least put them up in a frequently asked question arena on some of the websites. But there's one that I think we should talk about just a little bit, because everybody seems to come up with this idea that when the court case happened and stealing power, you were never stealing power. You were never stealing anything. Let's just talk a little bit about that court case and what had actually happened, because I know you reviewed that with me when I was with you last week, and it had to do with, in fact, you were trying to save your family and your wife's life. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yes. The place in Mortimer, the electric board obviously had all the rights of supplying the power there. And, of course, you were not intended to use your own power system. You're supposed to use their power. And, of course, in the area I was in, the council supplied a very large tub, electrically heated, so that you could do your washing. And, of course, when the element went, we had to ask the electric board to come and replace it. But they came. It took days before we could get them to return it. It came late at night. I only just got back from work, and they delivered it right, and off they went. Now, next morning, before I depart from work, the wife said, "Get your funeral boiler and put it on so it's hot when I get up. I can get the washing done quick." Okay, so I fill it up, and as I walk round the corner, I turned it on, bang! Everything, meter, blue spark, the lamp, light, all disintegrated. So I told her, "You'll have to ring the electric board to come and sort it out." But when I got back, they were just packing up to go, no electric. So I said to them, "You can't go, where's the electric?" "Oh, your fluorescent tube, 40 watt, did all this damage." So I said to the young chap, "Go get your manager. Nobody's leaving here until I have him here." So they bring him, and he says to the engineer himself, "What's the matter? He won't let me go home. Why?" "He wants me to turn that boiler up and open the bottom so he can look inside. That's his 40 watt present light that done all this damage." So I said to the boss, I said, "You all stay here until you turn this boiler up, let that bottom off. I want to see inside." So in the end, he said to them, "Turn it up and open that bottom up, let them look." So when I looked over, "Oh, so I see. So you've done a right job here repairing it. You're going to put the earth wire to the positive wire and the positive wire to earth. Look at this. Oh, look at this."
Hang on,
there.
Buddy. We'll be right there.
Well, yeah, we're going to be going off to break in just a second here. Yeah, you know the old expression, "Folks, don't try this at home." Kind of springs to mind here a little bit. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. It's the final segment here for today. My special guests, Professor John Searle, Bradley Keith, and Amar Verkil. So where did we want to go from here? John, you were just finishing a story about the boiler that blew up?
Yes, yes. No, I'd like to make it clear. If the wife had filled that boiler, when it's half full, she turns the power on and carry on filling the water in the tank till it's up to the level required. She's been short, would have been electrocuted. And quite naturally, I would come home and find the woman laying over the boiler, severely burnt. That so would John, be, that is really what angry me more. But then when they saw the problem, they said, oh, I'll take it away. I'll repair it, get it back tomorrow. There'd be no bill. They got it back, but they bought a bill. 3 weeks later, £400 bill. I refused to pay it. They sent it to the council. They sent it to me. And because it said my fluorescent tube had blown it, caused all the trouble. So I sent it back. The solicitor then rang me to say that I had 7 days. If I don't pay the bill, they take me to court. So I rang the solicitor and told him, do you know who you're talking to? He said, no, why? I have to be on the electric board. I said, what was done here was a very serious offence. They're lucky. I'm not charging them with manslaughter or murder. I am not going to pay the bill because they said that there would be no bill because they realised it was their problem, their fault. So the solicitor dropped the case, he wouldn't take it on, and it was never brought to court, and it was never paid. And of course, with the government concern, that sort of makes them angry. They should have recovered that money. But they couldn't get it because they were wrong. And of course, for any incident that came up, they would try to recover that money from you through the court. And of course, the government bribe people to report people who are not, well, we say stealing the electric. Stealing the electric, it also means you're not using the electric. You're using your own electric without their authority.
And so, John, the tank mains on that water tank were connected wrong, which caused all of that electrical damage in your house. And then there was some question of retaliation regarding the power lines. How did that play?
Well, what happened is that I went and said that I would not pay this money. I want the electric on. And they said in the Tarzan fashion, we are the electric board. There's nothing you could do to us. We can do what we like to you.
So they were bullying you.
Yeah. So I said, I'll hit you. They said, you and who else? Just me. There's nothing you could do to us. We can do what we like to you. All right, I said, we'll see. And then for the next 6 months, I made them work as fast as I could. And of course, the CDI man that was brought in to find out who was doing this damage realized it was me. And he actually had been employed by Scotland now, yeah, to work on my team to find out if I was a con man. So he knew I wasn't a con man. He knew I was immensely knowledgeable on magnetic and on electric, and anything I was doing would be safe. There was no harm to anyone, and that I wasn't stealing anything, so it couldn't really arrest me. And I just had, but by 3 months, I had taken a super grid. That's the power from the atomic power station, which was far higher than the normal grid line. And it was called super grid. It took 2 years to put those pylons up. And the electrical, they came to my place over what tools I was using to cut their stays. And then they saw this chest, T-chest, full of these bolts, and they look at it. He said to the CID, the pilot bolt, the CID, hoping, I guess, in his heart, that I could give an answer. He said, what are them, John? I said, oh, they're high tension bolts. Okay. The electric board couldn't send nothing out. So that's it. They carried on. But then the electric board decided that he was sure there were pylon faults, so he sent out teams to look for any pylons that had bolts missing. And, of course, they found one.
Yeah. And so, John, you were never arrested for stealing power. You were never arrested for stealing anything. What you had was a problem where they foolishly misconnected the mains on your water tank. That blew up your house, but it could have killed your wife.
Yes.
And what you wanted them to do was be responsible for what they had done in your home, the council house in Mortimer. And this led to a situation that was difficult for the judges to handle. So they separated you by asking you to accompany them for a period of time in a place of comfort. Is that about right?
Yeah. But they tried to get me into what they call a safe house. Unfortunately, it found out that all the houses were already got people in that they were protecting. So they had to take me in and protect me for them to cool off. Because they know that if they hounded me anymore, I would show them what I could actually do. And that would be big trouble. Probably 2 years with no electric whatsoever from London to Bristol and down to the south.
And that would have involved use of the disc, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so they were well aware of this.
Oh, yes.
Never had anything to do with stealing power. You were never chucked into prison or convicted for anything. It was just a matter of the best way for them to handle this situation, because you were on the electric board, and this was not Midlands Electric, this was Southern Electric Board, correct?
Yes.
And so there was never any stealing of power, never stealing of anything. You were essentially trying to defend your wife, your home, and your family.
That's correct.
Good. I'm glad we got that cleared up. We're going to put that up on an FAQ, Vinny, because it's something that they've been pounding Searle for years about. And I went over to the UK to get this sorted out once and for all. So thanks, Vinny, for letting us clear that one up.
I find whenever somebody gets accused of things, and particularly if they're called names, whatever they're talking about must have some substance to it. Otherwise, they wouldn't go through the bother of trying to demonize you.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
The thing really is, it's not what's happened in the past. I don't care if I stole the crown jewels or the Queen's knickers.
Look at it this way. Look at it this way, John. The best dirt that they've got on you happened like 50-something years ago. They ain't got nothing.
No, we should be talking about tomorrow. What do we do to protect ourselves? Not what you've done years ago. That isn't in question. That doesn't make the SEG. We should be we should be working all together to solve all the problems ahead of us. Never mind what happened 60 years ago. It's what's going to happen tomorrow that counts.
Well, what's more important to humanity? People that are always looking backwards or people that are always looking forwards?
It's a shame, really, that people only got intelligence to deal on the past. Any bad thing in the past, it wasn't a bad thing. There was a reason in it. And I was also protecting the aged and handicapped, where the electric board was just switching them off. And that also annoyed me, that they had no human feelings for these aged and handicapped people.
When people hear stories like this, they think, oh, my God, how could people be so inhuman? How could they do that? And my answer is, well, the only reason why you're wondering why they can do that when you wouldn't is because you're a moral person with a conscience who isn't completely psychotic. If you were an immoral psychotic patient, on the other hand, you would have no problem understanding why all of this stuff is going on, would you?
No.
Think about how the world is run currently. Wouldn't you think it would make sense to a total immoral psychopath?
What do we say, John? Things are upside down, aren't they?
I think the judge summed it up. You are a bloody dangerous man. But I can't do nothing. Of course he couldn't, because I hadn't done nothing against anyone, stole nothing, hurt nobody. I just proved to the electric board, do not challenge people. Because if you think, because you're government, no one can do anything to you, you might find you get badly hurt.
All right. Well, I think that's a nice place to leave it. Beware the individual, ladies and gentlemen. Individual meaning not divided. Because he's a very dangerous person indeed, especially if you're a collectivist who doesn't like the idea of people having any form of fracking freedom or creativity or anything that actually truly matters. These are the people that actually run the world, ladies and gentlemen. Not good, decent, honourable, hard-working, caring, creative, loving people. No. Basically, everything that I said there is the direct opposite, right up the top there. And as above, so below. You got to overthrow them at every single level with every single form of their eclectic scumbaggery. Otherwise, we might not survive. We'll be free. And what's the point of being alive if you're a slave? We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.